I'm here.
I've been waiting for you. Wonderful. We've been waiting for you.
I'm here.
I'm so glad.
It is a long walk, isn't it?
You never get to take it. I know. We're in the theater, so it's all this way to come all the way over here, to sit down at a table, to prevent the reality that it is not a very small space, so we can pretend that it is a very small space. I made it work.
All right. I think I might have gotten a little lost there.
Do you want to go again? Or we...
No.
You're comfortable? You're lost. Okay, so you came through the door. Mm-hmm. You walked over here where we prevented reality by pretending this is a very small space. Perhaps a small storage area where one might sit and discuss things. So we could be...
two clowns in a closet.
You got the thing. You got to do the door and...
and the button.
I know.
Woo!
Well, it's an important day. Because I took a look, and the last time you and I sat down together was March.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was too long ago.
To our friends, you got that episode in April.
I think.
In early April. And there was big news there, and I think it would be smart to start with an update.
Oh, yes, April. When I had surgery.
You had surgery, which was a very big deal.
It was a very big deal. Everything went about as well as it possibly could, and I am healed up and recovered and getting back into back acclimatized to acrobatics and stuff. So, I mean, everything is good. Everything is wonderful.
I think the thing that was so interesting. So, yes, we had a couple of very rough weeks, and then I spent a little bit of time with a full-time job of being your... weird patient who you know, patient nurse who comes running in at odd hours and hands you sandwiches. I did that, and I love doing it. What I thought was interesting was how you recovered, quote unquote, very quickly. There was a time where your energy was up and down. There was a time where this was going on, but you were back doing PT about the time you could, you know, wander around. You do a little bit of it and fall on the floor,
but very carefully. I couldn't actually fall on the floor.
Right.
Because that was a mess.
Right. But then where I was thinking was we've just now, months and months and months and months and months later, we've just started working towards acrobatics again.
And part of that is because I managed to injure my shoulder.
Mm. Which I think was related.
I don't know that it was related. I think I just pushed really hard and was doing both handstands and working on stuff for the building. That overused my shoulder at the end of the day.
That's a fair point. The summary is, and I'm excited to get to point out, you're well, you're yes. here, you ambled all this way in one piece, and you and I are getting back to doing some acrobatics now, which is fun because mm-hmm. I've been training while taking care of you and doing building stuff and art stuff, which we can talk about. I've been throwing myself at the wall, literally doing handstands and juggling and just a lot of solo work, which I love, but it's kind of boring, so I'm glad you're back.
It's nice to be back doing that part. Yeah.
What I didn't expect, because I didn't think about it, I made a commitment where I wanted to be strong enough so when you were ready to work, you didn't have to wait for me. But like I didn't need to recondition.
You succeeded.
Well, yeah, I think I may have gotten stronger. What I thought was so interesting that we immediately discovered was it wasn't just that your strength had to return.
Oh, no, it's...
I put my feet on your body in weird ways, and now you don't like it. You're not conditioned. It's not liking it.
It's that... it's putting a lot of weight into small area, which means that's a lot of pressure, and... physically, not like emotional pressure. It's physically a lot of pressure.
It can be.
And
you're up there screaming, don't drop me.
The body adjusts to that. It also apparently unadjusts to that. So yeah, the level to which my body can handle that much pressure.
You're like a tender baby now.
It's really frustrating.
I know. Well, and the thing that's funny is I say this, and you've gotten, I mean, you've also gotten very, you've been working and getting stronger.
Yeah. I jumped straight into PT because I found a PT program that I could use. So I started doing some of those very, very, very gentle, very, very small range of motion explorations and exercises. Heck, I started doing them before I got off the heavy meds, and then I very quickly realized that it was a lot harder after you got off the heavy meds.
I'm not going to mock the fact that you were on pain management and trying to work out. I've done similarly silly things.
And
don't do this, friends. Don't do that.
I mean, the small movement. What I was doing was actually appropriate for the space. But yeah, by the time I hit for that surgery, recommended the average for when they allow you to like, quote unquote, go back to working out is 6 weeks. And at 6 weeks, it was actually kind of amazing because week five, I felt sad and tired and still pretty awful. Week six, it was like, I have energy. I can work out. I mean, like, for like 5 minutes and then I have no more energy again.
Right.
But the difference was huge, so it makes a lot of sense that that's where it was. But so I jumped straight into what I could do, which was slow ramp up of getting back into things.
During the time I was helping you recover, and I don't want to speak to your story too much, but there was something I kind of made a mental note I wanted to mention to our friends.
Mm-hmm.
I have had the weird life of having taken care of a lot of people who have been through surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And I have yet to have encountered a person who, and this is specifically about anesthesia,
mm-hmm.
who didn't about 2 weeks after they washed out of that, where it washed out of their system and they had a massive emotional traumatic response.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely
and,
happened.
And you definitely happened. And we talked about it because we talked about it before it happened.
And I'm glad you brought it up because that is something that a lot of people don't talk about.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I have helped multiple people through surgical recovery. And the thing that I thought was most surprising is never once did a medical professional comment on this.
No.
I also know that for a lot of people, their, you know, recovery is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And surgery is hard. And all of these things are so hard that it's just one more thing in the ball of things. But sitting, you end up in a kind of objective seat because you're sitting back, you're watching a person, you're letting them sleep, and you're sort of on standby waiting to see what they need next, trying to get ahead of that. And eventually you do that enough times and you sort of develop a library of, yep, this is going to happen. And sure enough, it did. And I wanted to, and I know we're talking about a lot of medical stuff,
but we will
we will content warning the heck out of the beginning of this. I wanted to be clear to make a mention that this is a real thing that I haven't encountered anyone who hasn't experienced some amount of it. It may mm-hmm. be mild. It may be very, I've seen people have very big responses to small, and it's not pain management. It's not like withdrawal symptoms, and it's not pain, and it's not recovery is hard, which all of these things are true.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Specifically, anesthesia seems to have some effect that when it finally washes out of the system, and I want to be clear, I am not a doctor, I am not a lawyer, I am not a medical professional. I am an idiot who cares about people and helps take care of them when they're not feeling good because I happen to be nearby.
Yeah.
That's the extent of my expertise. But I have seen this, and I wanted to comment that if you find yourself going through any kind of procedure, make a note that this is going to happen. Tell your carer that this might happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that knowing that helped you.
Yeah, I also did get a similar note from several friends who have been through gender-affirming surgeries.
Mm.
Because it's one thing to have that. Because it's very upsetting. You just have like this period of time where you're very upset. And when that happens in the middle of something that's a surgical procedure where it's, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this, when it's something that is just avoiding something bad.
Yeah.
When it's one of those situations of you have to go have surgery to avoid other physical problem, having those negative feelings all tangled up in that makes sense. And there's like this logic to it. Yeah. And you can justify it. But when you're having a gender-affirming surgery, you're so prepped to have really positive emotions about the results.
Right.
That when you hit that couple of weeks in, just so much upsetness, it's really easy to turn that against yourself and to turn that against the joy that you may experience. Because sometimes people don't. To be perfectly honest, recovery is rough. Sometimes you don't start to feel like you've gotten to where you want to go until you're well out of the recovery period. I know there's I've heard lots of stories of people like having a really rough time. And I think that that adds to it. And I know a lot of people who warned me ahead of time, look, don't make any judgment calls. Don't make any life decisions. Don't put yourself in a place where you're actually making decisions during that period of time, especially, you know, when talking about gender-affirming surgeries, especially about your gender or about how your gender relates to what has happened.
Sure.
Because it all needs to settle first. And I think I was lucky in that.
You had a pretty good run.
I had a really good run. I had the, like, instantly happy with the result. Like, happy with the results before I saw the results level of excited.
You were cracking jokes about it before you had sobered up from the meds. I was there.
So I got really lucky. But 2 weeks in, like clockwork, there it was. And you were there to remind me that this was expected. I had been warned about it, and that really, really helped keep it from like just tanking me emotionally, which I really appreciated.
And I'm glad we had the note. So I wanted to share that. That was the one thing that I could bring to this conversation, mm-hmm. is if you're acting as a carer or you're going through this experience, there's a thing that is outside all of the other emotions. It seems to genuinely be a biological response.
Yeah.
And keep that in mind, so there's a little bit of balance, intellectually against what is going to be just a waterfall of emotion.
Yeah.
I did want to ask one thing before we moved on,
yes.
Which is that if, you know, you got three pieces of advice for recovering from anything, any kind of procedure. Do you have any advice?
Three pieces of advice. I don't know if I have advice that can be used generally for any type of procedure, but I can talk to getting top surgery, which is what I got. One, there's plenty of advice out there about working on like developing your pectorals so that theoretically the doctor can have an easier line to follow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that that's garbage. I don't know that it's good advice. But what I'll say is, much, much more important is practicing getting up off of the floor or getting up off of chairs or getting up off of a bed without using your hands.
Because you won't be able to?
Because you can't after. You can't directly after. And if it's, like, I'm really lucky.
You developed that. I remember the day you realized you could do that.
Yeah, just get up off the floor without
using my hands. And it was years ago. It had nothing to do with any of this.
So I was already well trained on this. But the level to which I needed every bit of that training was a lot. And I was like, why is nobody telling people that that's the thing they need? Like, forget about doing push-ups. Don't do push-ups. Do squats. Figure out how to get yourself off of the floor.
Okay. That's one.
Now, I know that I went in with an extreme amount of privilege on the fact that I live a lifestyle with support that allowed me to actually like really take a lot of time off where I didn't have to do anything.
We put all of our projects on hold so we could take care of you.
But I will say, I could tell how big of an impact that made on how well I recovered, how fast I recovered. So if that's at all possible for you, if you can set yourself up to have support to do the thing, to do so much more than you think you're, like, you, the level to which you will not be able to do things, or you can do things, but it's going to be so, feel so risky and feel like it takes so much more of your energy, is just much more extreme than you might expect. And if you can set things up so that somebody can just baby you while you're in recovery, and I mean for the first month and a half, if you can set yourself up so that you have those supports, do it. If you can't, I know plenty of people who have managed to get through this process without that level of support, but if you can, absolutely take advantage of any level of support anybody's willing to help you with.
Accept help is almost universally good advice. Okay, final thought?
Final thought. Once again, this is if you can stay away from the other things you would ordinarily have to do, sleep. Sleep as much as you can. Side note, I really felt like getting a wedge pillow was worth it for me. And I was really resistant on getting a wedge pillow because I don't like getting single-use objects that I have no purpose for later. Was absolutely worth it for this one.
Well, there you go. And it did help you get up and down.
Yeah.
It made your life easier.
Yeah.
I think the thing that brings us back to, you know, the conversation that's more generally what we talk about here. I wanted to make time for this.
Yeah.
But the thing that I thought was great was we gave you all of this support and we gave you the time. Because we spent a couple of months leading up to that.
Prepping,
wrapping up projects that we had. You know, we had ripped out wiring in the building. And we're like, we have to get to a stopping point. We're doing things here. And then that became our focus for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute you were back on your feet for more than that, because you would get up and you'd walk for 5 minutes and you'd fall over again and we'd have to like prop you up on a couch and let you sleep and then you'd get up and you'd go. You were like a toddler for a little while.
Yeah.
But after that, you have been like, whatever the positive, the building, the making stuff version of a wrecking ball is, because you've been back to that full tilt so much in just the last month or two has happened.
Oh, yeah.
Because we kind of hit
a lot for the past few months.
Yeah, because we had, I kind of remember we were getting back up to speed. You were getting back to doing things and we had a dumpster come through here.
We ordered a dumpster.
It showed up unexpected. I say come through here because it showed up early and we had to drop everything. But that meant that the year and a half of accumulated renovation stuff that we'd been living around.
Got out of here
and our mental health improved overnight.
Oh, yeah.
We are in the home stretch on finishing the library.
Yep.
Which was the library was always a big project because one, it was one of the more involved renovations in the building because the walls were rotten, the ceiling was rotten, the floor was rotten, everything was rotten. We had to take out a door. I highly recommend doing this because you learn that everything is a lie. So you just fix stuff and you learn. We didn't do this prior to getting here. We learned on the job. But I think the thing that was so great coming out of all of that is that you came back and we were really going again. And I was looking over in getting ready to sit down. I was looking over the very large list of things that we've actually accomplished because I like everyone else, especially on long-term projects, get to that thing where, oh, it's never going to move.
Yeah.
It's never going to lift. And then one day you look around and I realize we are sitting in an area of the theater that is now a creative workshop that
has two workbenches,
shelving, stuff in bins, things are getting organized. We have shelving for our circus props, which have gotten unpacked because once the library got done, we could take a wall of boxes that were in our way, move them out of our way onto shelves, move the next wall of boxes out and start going through them. And it's so it just started this cycle of doing, and you have been going nonstop. So the time that you took to rest, I feel like you've just got energy that I have not seen in a while, and it feels good to me.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful.
You have been pushing really hard too.
Well, yeah. I have this thing, I don't sit still well, and fighting with long COVID has meant that I have to learn to pace myself. The summer was very hard because it gets very hot, and that is one of the things that triggers off all my symptoms even more.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute the weather cooled, I start doing stuff. I don't know how to sit still. I start doing stuff. And so in the, you know, recent history, the big things are, obviously the library. We built a bench in the library. We built shelves. We put all this stuff together,
mm-hmm.
Carpeted it and all of this stuff, painting. And there's so many details that when you say you make a room.
Yeah, lots of steps.
So many steps. And we're not done. We still have things to do there. The other thing, I got back after about a 2-year break, because we got here and this place was, my job was to throw away garbage. And then it was, my job was to keep some of the garbage because it might be useful later. My job is to triage garbage. And the dumpster showed us, oh, please, let's get rid of this garbage.
Let's get rid of this garbage.
So we got rid of some of the garbage. We kept some of the garbage. Somewhere in all of that, we got enough things shifted that I started feeling creative again.
Yes. And
I started sculpting again. I haven't sculpted in, I think it was about 2 years. I hadn't sculpted a theater mask.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and to be fair, when you're sheetrocking a wall, you don't feel like then going and playing with different mud.
No, you don't.
You just don't have that urge. But I had finished all of that work and the paint was drying and I had a little bit of time. And so in between things, I would have on the table we're sitting at right now, I would have a silly little head. One day, I had an idea for a silly face. And I started sculpting it, and it started happening. And then I would leave it there, and it would make me laugh, and I would come work on it. I'd go off and work on the building some more. But then in between, I'm like, well, I got an hour. I'll come in and do this. So I finished the first one.
Yes.
It was about a week ago, two mm-hmm. weeks ago.
Yeah, very, very recently.
Fairly recently. And I thought, well, you know, I'll put that away, and I'll stop thinking about it, because I'm time to get back to work. And, of course, the minute I put it in, I finally put it in a bag, and I put it in a box for later use where it gets stored. The idea popped in my head instantly for the next mask. And I was like, 2 years, I don't have a thought about it, and now it's flowing and going.
It starts going. It starts picking up.
I think that for me, that reminder that, oh yeah, I'm not just here to move, I say garbage, but some of it is. Some of it is like, you know, debris from construction, and some of it is antiques that we found in the building that we have to pile in a corner and figure out what to do with, whether or not they're worth fixing. I mean, it's a very complicated, messy process. But it's very easy to forget what it is you do and what you're good at.
Yeah.
And getting those reminders of, hey, I have access to juggling props again. I have access to theater books was a bit, you know, just to touch them.
Oh, yeah.
To touch them. I have access to arts and crafts materials and a place to work on things. And that started me doing things. And when I started doing those things, I remembered, oh yeah, I am more than just a very terrible renovator. I mean, because that's not what I do.
We're not going to have a show on HGTV, no.
No, you don't. I joke about this old clown house all the time, but that's because I feel that we are fully incompetent. But what we do have is the willingness to keep trying and keep learning, and we get stuff done. So yeah, so I've been creative, and I've been organizing lots of stuff. I don't know what else I've been doing. Making lots of sandwiches.
I think that's what we've been doing. Keeping on working towards getting this place where we want to get it to.
The things that are in the queue. That are like the next. I know finishing up the library, because we have a bunch of stuff still left to do in there. We've got another room that we started renovating.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be, I think that is the first guest room.
I think that will be our first guest room. That'll be the first guest room.
So if you've been thinking, gosh, I really want to come and see this place, don't come yet, because right now the guest room is a wreck. But eventually we'll have a place, and that'll be, you know, where we would host someone when they come for a creative residency. And yes. I'm excited about that. And I admit, completely, I do the library before I do a room I sleep in. Do the theater before I do a room I sleep in needs a bed. But I'm noticing a pattern with me that at some point I will need to make some space for myself. But I keep being happier when this thing's greater vision starts happening and we start working on stuff. It's been a lot of uphill and a lot of frustration. I mean, I'm glossing over a lot of the frustrating because that's not the fun stuff for our friends.
Yeah, I'll say that the uphill and the frustrating is part of why it has taken this long before we have gotten back to talking with our friends.
It's been one thing after another of timing, and I'm having a very good day today, and I've had some days where they weren't good. We've had some projects that overwhelmed us, and we needed to rest, and you know. We promised we'd get one of these out. And it's been eating at me, honestly, because even though everyone who knows us knows you're okay, I feel like in my head...
Somebody only listens.
Only listens to the podcast.
And they have not heard where I've been for 6 months. By the time we've transcribed this.
Right. And I feel like that's bad. We shouldn't do that to our friends. I believe in slow creativity, but I don't believe in slow burn worry. There's plenty of that in the world. You don't need that from us. So that's your building update. That's your Liam update. What else are we for? Banter. Yeah,
I think we've bantered.
Have we bantered?
I think some of this has been bantered.
I don't know. I feel very... I know what it is. I'm full of a good meal and it's cold and raining outside. And so there's that part of me that's like, I just want to be cozy. So we're being cozy tonight. Yeah. The other thing is I'm stalling, and let me say why. Normally I say, oh, we haven't looked at the questions, and it's because I looked at them in a while ago, but we picked these questions months ago.
Yeah, I think we picked these questions
shortly after we recorded the last episode. We put them in an envelope.
Yeah, and we haven't looked at them since.
I have no idea what we're in for, but I do have to. I have to shout something out. I have had this thing in the back of my head, and it's a creative worry, which is that this conversation, this podcast, this conversation with our friends is over. I always think, oh, why are we doing this? Especially when we stretch out. And then every time I start thinking that, someone tells me that they're just recently listening to it or they're just recently discovering it. And I had an old friend who hadn't caught up with us find out that we had a podcast, and it said that they went through the catalog. I was like, well, you know, my whole life story. Now we have nothing to talk about. How are you? And then the other thing is that we received a painting.
Has that been since the last episode?
We shared about the painting last episode. Well,
still really cool.
Things like that have happened again. We've gotten little notes in the mail with questions. We got a painting that someone wrote a question on the back of. And we've taken it, to be fair, we've taken those questions and shuffled them into the questions bin. So we don't know where that question is. It may be
here. Yeah, we have no idea which ones came from where anymore.
Because I wanted to be fair, but I wanted to take a moment and say that those moments where this conversation becomes not just a one-way conversation, but a two-way conversation.
Oh, they're delightful.
Well, more importantly, it reminds me we're not just talking into the void. We're talking to you, our friends, and you're talking back, and you actually want us to keep going. And so I wanted to say thank you for that because I hadn't thought, well, maybe we'll just stop. And then we got out of nowhere, like a bunch of people discovered this, and we don't keep metrics about it.
I was going to say, because a key thing to keep in mind, because
we only know if you tell us.
We only know if you tell us. We don't do the metrics thing.
We're not
sitting there with a...
There's no tracking. There's no analytics. There's no ads. We're self-hosting this. We scrub that log so we don't even look at it. The only reason we would look at it is for a technical issue, and we'd have to look at it in the moment. But the reality of all of that is, the way we know this works is we put the message in a bottle, we throw it out in the ocean, and we wait.
And sometimes somebody says something nice back.
And sometimes we see a bottle and I go, wait, that's not the bottle we sent, that's a different bottle. And that is one of the most beautiful things about the way we work and the way we get to work, is that people reach out, they feel motivated by that little bit of humanity. And I wanted to make sure we said thank you for that, because it has been, through all of this, the thing that has excited me most. It's never been, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. That's not the point. It's not going to blow up big. That's not the point. The point is to have a conversation, which I think is interesting, but also to hear from people who are listening who say, yeah, that was that, more of that. So more of that.
More of that, or I have this additional follow-up question, or
whatever it is.
Yeah.
I thank you so much for that, because otherwise I probably would stop. And every now and then somebody goes, ooh, I listened to it. Ooh, I went for a walk and I thought about the thing you said.
It's nice.
It is nice. Anyway.
Are you done with the stalling?
The stalling? My heartfelt adoration of our friends who spend the time to listen to us? Yeah, that's
stalling. Yeah, the stalling that you've been preparing for the past couple of days since you haven't known what's on these cards.
You know, I don't call you out.
Yes, you do.
I all the time. Friends, it's like this a lot. Sorry.
You've been very confidently having full spiels in your list of things you wanted to make sure that we got in. Did we get through all of them?
Well, that's what I'm checking. Did I make fun of you?
I don't know whether you have.
I don't think I've made fun of you. Such a great thing to make fun of, that I haven't had the time.
You've had the time.
I've talked to our friends. I've talked about the building. Mm-hmm. We've talked about
my recovery.
Your recovery, which was something we want to make sure we covered. I think we've hit the highlights.
I'm sure we missed something.
If we missed something, please tell us. See how I sneakily...
Very nice. Encouragement for the conversation.
Right. If there's something you want to know about, ask. We'll try to remember to mention it. In the meantime, I see you have these cards.
I have the cards.
I feel like it's been long enough that I don't remember the format. So let me remind our friends who are listening of the format as well.
What's the format here?
It's been so long.
What's the plan?
Our friends, for several years now, have sent us...
questions.
I was going to go a little further, but thank you for cutting me off and getting to the point.
What on earth were you going to say that was further than questions?
I could have flowered it up a bit. And now it's starting to feel like the podcast.
Yeah, see, now we're starting to banter. The banter has begun.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to continue my point.
Okay.
You send us questions. We grab 5 of them at random. We sit down together. We have this conversation. We answer the questions.
You're fibbing when you say we grab 5 of them at random.
We don't grab 5 at random.
We curate an episode.
Wow.
With the questions.
Wow, you make it sound so pretentious.
We sit down, we think about it.
I don't want to do an episode where all I talk about is shoes.
Exactly.
I want to have variety and shape. I'm an old vaudevillian, and the one thing we learned, and this is true, it's been documented.
Yes.
There's a shape of a classic burlesque or a variety show. Not just burlesque people undressing to music, but burlesque as the overall spectacle. Yeah. There's a shape, a classic shape, and I figured it out on my own, and I thought, oh, I'm so smart, I know how to build one of these shows. And then you were in a vaudeville museum?
I was not in a museum specifically devoted to, but there was a
exhibit
that was put on.
And they had that listed out how to do it.
And yeah, they had somebody, a director, I think a director or a host, I don't remember, but had like their, this is our format, and I looked at it and I went, wow.
That looks
extremely familiar.
And it's how we built. So I'll say that while it's not random, the goal is to create a nice shape. And I maybe we do that, and maybe we just gave away the secret sauce. Everyone thinks we're liars and they don't want to listen to us anymore. You might have ruined it.
Well, if so, I did so by telling the truth.
Oh, that's true.
So I hope that everyone does not think we're liars.
We should never do that again.
All of these are... What, tell the truth?
Well, it's clearly getting us in trouble.
I think you're the only one who thinks anyone's in trouble.
I have a guilty conscience. Have you noticed?
It seems to be on alert today.
I'm a little heightened in this regard. Okay.
I think it's because you're nervous because you haven't seen
the questions. I like to prepare. I pretend. Well, here's the thing. I prepare and then I forget so I don't have to remember. Because it comes back and it's been long enough that superpower
may or may not work.
It cannot get... The only way it can get more not good... is with my clever use of the language, more not good, is if I sat down completely blind and, you know, was caught off guard, at which point I would just do a lot of swearing.
And then you would have to go back in and bleep all of that out.
Yeah, and I don't want to do that, so let's get on with it.
All right. So...
You send us questions. We read those questions. We curate them carefully into a lovely episode of... Nah, don't do it again. Mm-mm. It's not time.
But
we could get out though, because we could be like, we're out of time. Sorry.
No. And then we take turns answering them.
That's right. We both weigh in on the questions because I think my background is different than your background, and I think getting different perspectives is important.
I agree.
That didn't sound as deep as it meant to. It meant to be complimentary. You've had a varied and interesting life.
So have you.
Oh, that's so nice have of you to say. Well, everyone is an unknowable mystery made of stories.
Ooh, that was nice.
That's why it's so fun to sit down and talk to people. The thing where I get smarter happened. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did.
That came out of nowhere. That was just wisdom.
Mm. There's at least flowery language.
Hey.
It was a quotable. I've lost it already, but it was a quotable.
Guess it wasn't that quotable.
No, I'll catch you all later. Right. It's recorded.
And so, without further ado, without further stalling, we've now delayed. We have questions, which our lovely friends so tolerantly have created to keep us from running amok and force us to sit down and relax and answer. And so we don't panic at all. We take a deep breath in. I hadn't said release yet. You got ahead. I was slow. You take a deep breath in. And you take a deep breath in. Got him.
I took too deep of a breath to take another deep breath.
Well, what have you learned? What have you learned? You're getting high.
I need to pace myself.
When you're talking to me, perhaps you should. Yes, take it. But let's do this correctly. Take a deep breath in. And as you breathe out, think to yourself, that's a terrible thing to think. It's just a sound. What did you think?
Worked for me.
Did it? Just to think, ha? Huh?
Yes.
Okay. Ha.
Ha.
Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha.
Okay. We're getting off track. Questions?
Yes. I have these lovely cards.
Again, you got these lovely. They are nice.
We've written the questions. So,
okay.
So, are you prepared for the first question?
Who are you asking? Me?
Yes, I'm asking you.
Oh, well.
Because they can answer.
But it'll be months before.
But it will be some time before we'll hear.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, am I ready? On behalf of my friends who want us desperately to get on with it, who have literally sent us postcards which said, stop talking and answer the questions. I'm ready.
Okay.
Go ahead.
My first question.
The one on the card. Go ahead. Start now.
I will.
Take a deeper start. Go again. I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yes.
First question. This gag never gets old to me. I don't know why, but interrupting you is like one of my greatest pleasures in life. And watching you break and laugh.
It is so frustrating.
You're so angry right now.
It is so frustrating. I'm frustrated. I'm not angry.
You're not angry.
I'm frustrated.
Okay. Deep breath. It'll help with the frustration. In. In again, one more time, once more, and let it end. Before you go, I used to get on stage, and if the audience was really tight, if they were tense, if they were not ready to deal with me, I would literally stand there in front of them and get them to take a breath with me. And whenever anything went wrong, I would just look at them, and I would do it again, and they would do it with me, and we'd all chill out.
Yeah, but I doubt that you said take a deep breath.
No, I was going, and then I would hold it a little too long and everybody would laugh. And then I go, ah. And then go, yeah, okay, we laugh. Because laughter is exhalation.
Yes.
With style.
Exhalation?
With style. The first question on the card. You know, when you hand them to me, I get to it. I'm not like this. I don't dally. I don't wait around until the proper moment. I get right to it. I don't waste a second. But with you, it goes on forever. Why is that?
I wonder. I'm sorry. I wonder why that could possibly be.
I think it's my unbridled affection for sitting here with you and with our friends and being silly. I don't do it enough, so I have to do it a lot.
All right. Are you actually ready?
I have no idea. Okay. I hereby formally declare that I, sitting in this chair now, at this moment in space-time, am just about ready.
Just about.
I don't know. I need something, clearly.
What is it that you need?
I don't know.
What can I give you?
It had to get silly before I could start, and it has. You've laughed out loud and snorted once.
So have you.
Did I snort?
I don't know if you snorted. You've definitely
laughed. I laughed, and I love that. And I hope everybody else is either fast-forwarding or laughing, depending on what they need. But not too far.
All right.
The first question in tonight's episode, middle of the night, rainy night, beautiful, cold weather, wearing a hat and socks, sitting at the table with my friends, holding a lovely thought and a lovely moment, ready to listen, shutting up now. The first question is something you're about to say. Go ahead.
Okay.
Anytime now. What's wrong?
You're interrupting.
Every time we hand you the cards, you stall.
I don't stall.
Read the question.
I will.
Now?
Yes.
You're stalling.
I'm not stalling.
Friends, I don't know what to do with them.
You just are not shutting up.
Showing up?
Shutting up.
Shutting up.
Closing the mouth.
The mouth. I wish everybody could see the little hand pinch puppet gesture you made at me. The mouth. Shutting the mouth. The mouth. All right. Professionalism. We are broadcasters. We should be better than this. We have a standard to uphold, as you know. That's why we've been doing this for the last 10 minutes. The question.
The question is.
Is. On the card. Read it.
I'm going to.
But no, you're not. You're just like.
You're interrupting.
I am not.
You literally put your hand in front of the card.
I did not, did
I? Yes, you did.
Well, friends, did I? What did you see?
They didn't see anything.
See? Because I did nothing wrong. I'm so glad we covered that. I was worried I was going to feel guilty.
This is audio only. They couldn't see it.
Did you hear my hand whoosh through the air? Hang on, I'll whoosh it.
No, that was you making whoosh sounds with your mouth.
You don't know that.
The mouth that you won't close.
I'll close my mouth.
Okay.
Okay, I'm closing my mouth. Right now.
Okay.
Don't let me interrupt. The please, Jersey, smack me if I interrupt again. I'm starting to cry.
The first question is...
On the card. You're out of practice. You're laughing.
Yes, I am out of practice. I did make a decent nap, though. That is the sound, that's the word.
Oh, yeah, we got to do a little word moment. Put the cards down. We got to do a little word moment.
The word nap.
The word nap does not mean what you think it does, which is a little rest with your eyes closed in a nice dark place where it's warm and comfortable. A nap in a clown and slapstick is the sound of smacking. So if I was to smack someone and go, ooh, why I oughta... That clapping noise would be the nap. And a person who does it says, well, I'll take the nap.
Yes.
The other person says, I'll give the slap. And this has been your Learning a Little Lingo with Liam.
Learning a Little Lingo with Liam.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
It is. If only any of it had actually been me.
Oh. I know how we can fix that.
Yeah.
I'll shut up.
Okay.
All right. I'm shutting up.
All right. The first question is, what would an anti-clown be? He's keeping his mouth shut.
You said, can I open it now?
Yes.
Okay.
Now is the appropriate time.
What would an anti-clown
be? What would an anti-clown be? Yes.
Okay. Truthfully, simplest possible answer, and I'll unpack it after I say it, smartphone.
Okay.
Now, please understand, like all my friends, I am a technology-obsessed, hackery weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's a passion. But what I have noticed is that the clown exists in a state of wonder, a state of not knowing, a state of guessing and finding out and failing and being wrong. These are all things that are avoided by being able to look things up on the internet.
Yes.
Also, the other thing the phone does is make you not extremely present. I'm not attacking anyone with this. I'm just as guilty as everyone else. If I've got the device in my hand, I'm only half in the room.
Yeah.
Or less, depending on how focused I am. So in many cases, I would say the clown is really just who I am when I put all of those disconnecting, pacifying, distracting, soothing things away. And I'm just a raw nerve, but then I turn up the joy and the silliness. Mm-hmm. And as you know, that device that is the glass pacifier that is made of sadness has a never-ending supply of, yeah, a tiny bit of dopamine, but it's laced with enough joy-killing nonsense and, mm-hmm. and badness. That, and I don't want to focus on that, but it keeps the joy from happening
mm-hmm.
for the most part. So I would say, shortest possible answer in the modern era, the anti-clown is the smartphone. Is a person holding a smartphone.
I think that's a really good answer.
But I say that philosophically, and I'm not calling anyone out who's holding their phone listening to this. That's not my goal.
Yeah.
My goal is to point out the difference in the way the approach to reality is. And by reality, I mean the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because reality is
a spongy concept.
It's a wibbly concept for anybody.
True.
So what would you say the anti-clown is?
Oh, that's a hard thing to answer after you have, because I think...
You literally told me to shut up so you can ask a question. It went on forever that you wanted my answer, and now you're saying it's hard to answer after I do.
Yes, because you had a really good answer.
Gosh, sorry.
So I'm going to take a slightly different spin at it.
I hope so.
And say that another possible anti-clown... opposite to would be a stage magician.
Why is that?
Because both use a lot of the same techniques mm-hmm. of directing audience focus, but for opposite purposes.
Example, explanation.
A stage magician uses the tools to direct an audience's focus to send the audience to paying attention to shiny thing that I've put over here so that you don't pay attention to the real thing I'm doing over in this other place. But it's just, you know, putting something in a pocket, or switching something else out, whatever it is that makes the magic trick work.
Mm-hmm.
They're using the focus shifting to make it so you don't see how the magic trick works. And clowns tend to take the audience focus in the exact same, with a lot of the same methods, and then direct them exactly to the real thing that's happening in order to go, isn't that neat?
Yeah, that's actually, it's solid.
I mean, and there's overlap in both directions. I've seen stage magicians that do the thing where they turn around and highlight how a trick happened. And I've seen
clowns lie. Just lie to you.
I've seen clowns lie. I've seen clowns do stage magic tricks.
Oh, sure.
In front of an audience member, sometimes with one audience member on the stage, they're doing the trick there, and everybody else can see what the trick is.
Mm.
Sometimes it's just doing a trick in order to follow it up and tell some sort of a story. So it's a little wishy-washy. But
so that's not any wishy-washy. So the So the clown is showing us what's going on, and the anti-clown is misdirecting.
In order to tell us some other story. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's a perfectly acceptable answer. I think that's good. So I will accept that, and I will move on to that.
And I would like to be clear here in a very similar way to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
If we've both taken an approach on what anti meaning opposite of. Which yes. is not inherently bad. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing the stage magicians do that, just like you are not calling people out for being in their phones.
Right. I say I will add on to this that I've worked with a lot of stage magicians,
mm-hmm.
and we've gotten into arguments about this, about like what is truth, what is perception, what is observation, what is entertainment, you know, these very philosophical things.
They're defending
their right within a theatrical context in which people have shown up because the word magician was on the bill. They knew they would be lied to. They knew they would be fooled in order to enjoy that feeling, whereas the clown is there to reveal truth. It's yes. a very different approach. Usually it'll get you slapped by a magician if you talk about it too much. Now, I would like to propose that I just get into this question and not stall.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
I feel like we've heard plenty from me.
So we're going to just go straight into the question.
Anytime you're ready.
Absolutely. No stalling. No stopping.
This timeline.
What about this timeline?
I'm reading the card.
Oh, it's a question.
No, that's not the question. That's the start
this
of the...
This timeline.
Stop. Everybody take a deep
that
breath.
That is missing a question.
Hold on. I hadn't gotten there yet. Everybody take a deep breath. I apologize. I didn't mean to suggest we were going to focus on this timeline for more than a moment. But I'm now going to read the question, which starts with that phrase. All right. This timeline is a glitched one. It's almost identical to Timeline Prime, but everyone has a weird personality trait / habit that is completely off character. It is immediately obvious to anyone who ever visited Timeline Prime. What's yours?
Okay, wait, so this is a glitched timeline.
We're in the glitched timeline.
There is somewhere Timeline Prime.
And
if you pop over here from there, there's something obviously just off.
You know, what is completely off character from Timeline Prime for you? That like anyone, it would be immediately obvious to anyone who is from Timeline Prime.
Let's see. This is a difficult question.
Really?
Well, I'm trying to think about what...
What is quintessentially, you know...
What thing about me is... could be outside of character for somebody who was me? Is a weird question to ask someone. I like it. Don't get me wrong. I like it.
I believe it's a good question. Shall I read it again?
I'm trying to think of an answer. We haven't. I had some idea months ago when we picked this.
I thought you did.
And now I don't remember what that was.
I do think it's interesting that essentially the question is, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, what's...
That shouldn't be, but is. Which I love, like, that essentially one of our friends has written in, what is wrong with you? I feel like that's on brand to get that question.
Totally.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think... I'm thinking this is a hard one to come up with.
Friends are on the line. The pressure's
on. I think, you know what? Maybe Timeline Prime me does not speak German. It's kind of a weird thing that I do.
Okay, you're going to have to explain. Why is it weird that you speak German?
Because I literally got, like, that I got a German degree. I got that degree because I didn't want to have to take German in college. I didn't want to take foreign language at all in college. I ended up with a degree in it. This is a completely...
So there's some... So in the timeline prime...
I didn't pick a degree.
What did you do instead?
I have no idea what I did instead. All I know is that I didn't approach school with a "I'd like to get out of having to do more of that."
That sound was the sound of me throwing that card at you.
Because that's not a good approach. And yet it is what I did.
Here we are in glitch timeline with you.
With a degree in German.
With a degree in German. Okay.
That's me.
I accept it.
So, I will ask you the same question.
Please do.
This timeline is a glitched one. It's almost identical to Timeline Prime, but everyone has a weird personality trait / habit that is completely off character. It is immediately obvious to anyone who has ever visited Timeline Prime. What's yours?
You know what I think it is?
What do you think it is?
At this point, and I say this with no ego, I have had a career in comedy.
Yes.
You would think at this point I could tell a joke. No, I'm really good at telling stories. Mm-hmm. I'm really good at saying funny things or things in a funny way. But like the format that is joke. I'm really notoriously bad.
You are actually really bad.
And you would think that someone who has literally studied comedy would be better at telling jokes. Yeah. I think this is the tell that we're in the glitch timeline, because anyone who sat with me and said, "Tell me a joke," and I tell them one, they go,
"No.
Well, what happened?"
Yeah.
"Who hurt you?" You know, there's something that happened. So my answer, short and sweet, is I think the fact that I can't tell jokes.
Well, that makes sense. I think that totally makes sense.
Wow, you're agreeing awfully fast. You're very quick to agree.
Well, it's a good one.
Is it?
Yeah. All right. You came up with something good. I had to really dig. I had no idea.
Oh, do I have anything else in there? No, that's pretty much everything else is. I'm a walking idiosyncrasy, so the idea that one of them is off is a little weird. But that one seems pretty obvious.
All right. Next question. One hears of actors speaking of getting into acting or studying acting, yet the two eponymous clowns within the confines of the closet speak of getting into clown or studying clown. Is there a significance to this choice? How does the intent to verb rather than be noun, e.g. known as someone who juggles as opposed to someone who is a juggler, apply to this?
First of all, I love being eponymous. I just want to take a moment and just sort of wallow in my eponymity. Sure. I think for me, I'm a bit of a knob about this, if I'm honest. So early on, there's a problem in the world of clown, and it boils down to this. There are many people who have not had classical training who decide, and you've banged on about this, mm-hmm. decide to take up the mantle and go do good work, and often do. Mm-hmm. Make no mistake, they often do. And those of us who have spent a lot of energy and time and effort to actually get some training want a distinction between that. And somewhere along the way, I got it in my head that distinction was the difference between clown and clowning. Mm-hmm. American clowns who are part of the alley system very often talk about clowning. And a lot of the European clowns and the people I studied with called it clown. Some of them didn't care. I know one teacher who's an amazing teacher, and he says clown is a four-letter word. You bring mm-hmm. it to the table, and everyone starts talking about either politics or murder. You know, they're either sewer murder clowns or sewer murder clowns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing I think does speak to this is my sense, and the word juggler versus juggling versus juggler. The minute you are noun, the thing, you essentially become archetypically that. And there's an expectation there.
Mm-hmm.
And if, like, you know, if I walk in the room and I say, "I'm a juggler," they're like, "Well, pick up those things and juggle them. So let's see how good you are."
Yes.
If I happen to juggle, that could be a happy accident.
Yes.
I mean, it's the result of many hours in the lab practicing. And I feel like for me, being a clown, feels weird and bad. Trying to be the verb that is a clown.
Trying to clown.
Has potential for me, because I can be that thing and then I can put it down, or I can be that. And I understand that grammatically that should be clowning, and yet somehow in my head they are reversed. But for me, the goal as a clown is to be the verb, is to be a verb that sometimes stands still and avoid calcifying into a noun over time. And so that's my personal distinction.
Okay.
But I think ultimately it was I came out of pedigree and pretension, and it stuck as a habit. And I have noticed that when people talk about clowning, they are either coming from, like I said, the American Alley system,
mm-hmm.
or very often in acting programs, there will be a clowning program as well.
Yes.
That's weird to me because it reverses it again. So I don't think there's any particular rule as to how this plays out. But to me, it's the distinction in my mind, the difference between trying to be archetypically, iconically, the thing that does it well, and just trying to do the thing as often and as best I can.
Okay.
There's my answer. How about you? What's the distinction? Is there a distinction for you?
Repeat the question.
I'm going to, but I'm... One hears of actors speaking of getting into acting or studying acting. Yet the two eponymous, I love that, clowns in the closet, clowns in the confines of the closet speak of getting into clown or of studying clown. Is there a significance to this choice? How does the intent of verb rather than noun, e.g. being known as someone who juggles, you know, versus a juggler, apply to this? How does it all come together?
Well, interestingly, I think you and I have different opinions on this.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe we don't agree.
But, and I will say, started from, for me, the distinction definitely started in the same place of just which schools say what.
Mm-hmm.
But also, to me, the existence of the clown state and the clown persona,
mm-hmm.
make it that complex noun verb thing.
I can see that.
Where clown is both the noun and the verb.
The aura of it.
You
can feel it when it comes in the room. Mm-hmm. So for sure, there's definitely a thing.
So, and when I've, and part of this is my perception of a lot of what I see from American clown. But American clown builds from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
And European clown builds from the inside out.
Typically.
That's,
I find that changes depending on who you ask.
Sure. But that's a generalization.
It's a pedagogy.
And while both can land in the same place, I feel like somebody who's getting into clowning is... because it's coming from, more likely to be coming from the Alley system and from an American context, is putting on makeup and acting silly, whereas somebody who is getting into clown is finding that being. That state in themselves and then embodying it.
That's way better than what I came up with. Wow.
So that's why it doesn't flip the other direction for me. Why it's not sitting there acting like it, saying I would like to be a person who juggles. It's like, no, it's, I am the clown when I am in clown. I am the clown.
What if there's another clown?
Then there's another clown.
There another the clown?
Yes.
So they're the clown, you're the clowns. It's like collectively.
Then there's the clowns.
Oh, I see. This explains why children often refer to you as Mr. the Clown.
Yeah.
Me as Mr. the Clown.
They've called you Mr. the Clown quite a bit. And I think that's that's a thing that happens when when that's what's brought in the room. So to me, that's how they relate, is that yes, there is a verb of what you're doing there with doing the work of the clown. But it's embodying a state.
Hmm.
So to me, that is much more like being the juggler.
Just taking on a...
than it is being somebody who juggles.
Taking on an archetype.
Taking on an archetype.
Persona. That's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting. And I wonder how much of your experience of that... because when you start looking at mask and mask traditions, and you know, while we play around with things like trance mask, which are they're more anarchic, you know, if you look at something like Comedia, where they are set in stone, they will behave a certain way, they are archetypes unto themselves. I wonder, studying, how much of your opinion was forged by studying some of those mask traditions, which we have done in more recent history. Did that alter your opinion, or did you have it beforehand?
I think that opinion was already set before I got into more mask work. I mean, I was aware that the nose is the smallest mask.
Sure.
Conceptually, and some of where the teaching that informed what I was learning came from was from that. But I think that was pretty set before I started getting deeper into mask.
I think what we always struggle with is that, once again, our friends who listen to us and ask us questions are way smarter than we are.
It's true.
I mean, they ask us these deep questions. We're busy up to our hips in cardboard boxes trying to be funny, and we spend precious little time actually being upon us.
I had an additional thought on the idea of being the archetype of the clown, which is that while there are a few clown archetypes, we mentioned that the nose is a warning sign.
I like to think of it as a cautionary tale.
Label, as opposed to, because the thing about the clown is that, with a few exceptions, because there are, as I mentioned, there are some clown archetypes, you don't know what you're getting into when you see a clown, other than something outside of normal and hopefully fun.
It's
like that's what you know you're getting into. So it's not like, so while you can go, okay, clown, do something funny.
Last time that happened, I didn't succeed. I will tell you that. Maybe that's a joke telling thing.
But you tend not to end up in the same situation as, okay, juggler, juggle these things. Well, mostly because you'll say, okay, clown, juggle these things. So, you know, there's no winning for losing.
Sometimes. Well, you know, the funny thing is, I used to explain that when we were creating characters, and I owe the early days of our troupe to the fact that somebody wanted to just create a character and play that. I think one of the things that's what's interesting was, we used to say that juggling was a plumbing problem. And that it was like, nobody calls up for entertainment and says, I've got these three balls and I need them to move through the air in intricate patterns, and therefore I need a juggler. Because if you had a stop toilet, you'd be like, I need you to come here and make the stuff go down the toilet. No one approaches entertainment in this particular way where they go, I would like the juggling to happen. And because at the next level, they want something off a menu they can order, and yet simultaneously, when people talk to us about the idea of creating things, they often come up to us and go, I want you to do that thing you do. I do not know how to describe it, but please come and do that.
Do that. Do that over here, and then also over there, and maybe...
over here.
Over here.
Yeah. Right. And so it's a weird problem, because I think there's a tacit understanding that maybe it's the blanket term comedy, maybe it's the blanket term physicality. There's some sense that, okay, that can happen in this area.
Yeah.
And then we don't worry so much about how it happens.
Yeah.
But it is a weird thing that when you start thinking about the nuts and bolts, the noun of it, you know, people don't tend to think of it in those terms. Someone acting silly.
Yes.
And the clown still may both be doing the same thing, but they are very different somehow.
Yes.
And people have some vague understanding, some subliminal understanding of that. But I don't think they walk in the room knowing it when they go to discuss it. So that's it's an interesting problem. Mm-hmm. I'm going to flip this on its head. Before I do, I have to put a small content warning on it.
Okay.
This question might suggest that our audience doesn't exist, and I know they do.
Okay.
So the warning is, I'm about to read a question which might suggest that our audience doesn't exist, but I know you do, and I don't want you to worry about that. So I'm going to take a moment and say, I'm sure you're just as real as I am, and now I'm going to read the question. A while back, you discussed the concept of a fictional clown. Perhaps a clown's performance cannot be fictional, but does it matter if to the clown if their audience is fictional? Not imaginary, but made up of people playing a part.
Ooh.
And we have entered the deep water.
It's a very interesting question.
It is.
I think, personally, that... that depends on whether or not they actually become part of an audience. Mm-hmm. Because I have been places where people are performing as characters, cosplaying, which has differing levels of performing as characters, and have been in a room where a performance is happening. And I think that assuming that they become part of the audience, they are actually there to watch the show, even if they are watching the show in character, I don't think the clown cares. They're a person that's part of the audience. They care that the audience member is there, yes. I don't think that the identity of that audience member and its realness matters at all. Mm. I could see my clown becoming very upset with somebody who tried to be part of the show. Because they are there that day being a character.
Yeah.
When it is not their show. I can also see that simply being something that is incorporated into what's happening
you
there.
Work with you what
work
you,
with it.
Yeah.
And somebody ends up playing. So I could see, I don't know whether that's the clown getting frustrated or me getting frustrated. With somebody who is jarring the gelling of an audience with their focus on this character they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
But that there's a person in the room. If they're part of the audience, that's fantastic. And frankly, the more if it's a situation with audience participation, which immediately puts the audience member as a part of the show, the more outlandish the things that that person states are true that my clown gets to work with, the more fun everyone's going to have in a lot of ways.
I think you said that they need to be a part of the audience for that to work. And I have some thoughts on that.
Okay.
So I don't want to step on you, but that's the nugget that I heard so loudly.
Yeah, that's the big one. I think that's otherwise they're having a good time. So
anyone who's playing a character.
Shall I read you the question?
Read it one more time for the formal record. Sure.
A while back, you discussed the concept of a fictional clown. Perhaps a clown's performance cannot be fictional, but does it matter to the clown if their audience is fictional? Not imaginary, but made up of people playing a part.
Well, first off, I shouldn't have worried about the content warning because clearly this person has listened to us in the past, which I think is wonderful. Thank you for the question. Now, here's the thing about playing characters. The playing of any energetic state, clown, any sort of persona. Mm-hmm. I'll even say the word sauna and with a hyphen and let people put whatever word in the front of it they need to in order to make this point work. Any of those require a certain expenditure of energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to be tired when you're done playing it. You go and you put, even if you just put on a costume, you go to a costume party and there's that little part of the back of your brain going, I'm a pirate, I'm a ghost, I'm a vampire. By the end of the night,
you're a bit tired.
There's an energy usage. The performer who is doing this in, energetically ethical, we start getting into some very woo-woo country there, but is essentially going to their audience and saying, charge me up so I can be this thing even bigger.
Mm.
So, like, the clown hits the stage mid-size.
Yeah.
The more you give the clown, the bigger they get. The clown will expand and fill the room, provided that includes the audience. The audience gives them a lot. They have a lot to work with. If they don't, well, it goes away. Here's the rub. If you are in the audience playing a character, and I've encountered this both as a teacher and as a performer. As a performer, I had a great experience. I was at a show, and the show had people playing characters in the audience watching the show, and they added their energy as those characters to my show. And it was a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Because they understood that they were watching a spectacle. And so they gave their energy, wherever their energy was coming from, they gave it to us. Mm-hmm. And that charged us up. And so it was funny. Yes, I was performing for a talking dog. That's fine. Sometimes you get booked to perform for a talking dog. Okay. So we did that. And it was a really positive experience because their energy went to the center spectacle that the audience was watching. They have to be a part of the audience ritual for it to work. Now, what this comes out of in a deep, low-level psychological thing is what takes us into the lab. We are all needy egomaniacs. We're all needy children. And when we perform, like right now, I'm taking the stage and I'm getting big to explain my point. Everyone's giving me a little space. Oh, let's see what you got. What happens is I'm saying very quietly, like all actors, like all theater people, like all transcendental beings possessing humans, whatever version of this gets you into the lab to discuss this, is look at me, 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 I'm great, I'm great, I'm great, I'm great, mind, energy, yay. I'm the central focus. And right now I have it. It is appropriate for me to have it because I'm answering the question. I'm making a point by demonstrating it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the moment. I'm supposed to. If you were to grab the moment right now, if I didn't pass it to you, it would be inappropriate. If my audience switched us off, well, they're no longer the audience, so it's no longer relevant to this moment.
Yes.
I would hate that emotionally, but that's the thing. I was in the lab teaching about status and focus, which the two basic ideas are, you know, who's got the ball, essentially. And where everybody looks is you look at the ball. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty obvious. If these things are a ball, I can throw it to you and it's your turn. But right now it's mine and I've got the ball. Isn't that cool? It's that simple. I just unpacked most of how theater works with the phrase a ball. I'm really curious what color you think that ball is, but it takes us off the topic. Moving on. So I had a student who kept grabbing for the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be going, I had everybody sitting, and I said, please, let's go around in a circle. You know, you were getting to know each other for a deep dive. And I said, tell me a bit about what you're here, and what you're learning, and what your name is, and what you'd like to be called. Yada, 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 yada. This person does it. Someone over here on my right, so I reached to my left to say this. And someone on my right goes, oh, yeah, I got a thing like that, too. And I said, oh, really? And the second person does it. This person on the right jumps in again.
Mm-hmm.
They're grabbing for the ball. About the third time, I go, just a moment. And I turn to the person who's been grabbing for the ball. I go, clearly you got something to say. Here's the ball. And they lock up. Discomfort sets in. I haven't called them out. I very explicitly have not called them out. I've said it's your moment now. I've put the spotlight on you. And this person turned out to be great in the lab. I want to be clear on this. But this moment demonstrated that they were dragging for an energy they didn't even know what to do with. They wanted that energy so bad. They needed that energy so bad, they didn't know what to do with it when they got it, and they froze, which killed the energy in the room. I think the problem of the idea of people performing the act of being audiences is there's the danger of them crossing into performer mode, like you were talking about, mm-hmm. at which point grabbing the energy away from the stage, it's all about me, and the energy dies. There's a word for this person in stand-up comedy. They're called a heckler.
Mm.
Now, yeah. in the case of the lab example, this person was not heckling. They were genuinely trying to contribute. They were falling all over themselves to be a part, to make connections with every single person, because they were truly wanting to be that person who connected with everyone. And once we got past the focus problem of how they approached that, they became this incredibly charismatic person, because of course they were finding ways to connect with people. But I think it sings to this problem
mm-hmm.
that when we're working, we have to pass the ball around. And what's really neat about that is you can physicalize this with an actual ball and throw it to someone, and everybody watches the ball go. And a whole room full of people turn their heads like dogs, looking over to the left or to the right. And it's a very exciting idea in theater, because it prevents that what's important? What should I be looking at? It's gone. It's gone the minute I say just follow the ball. Go. In the lab, we named the ball Larry. We all follow Larry. Where's Larry? I'll actually stop in the middle of the class and go, okay, where's Larry?
Mm-hmm.
And people will go, I see the problem. They'll figure it out instantly. They'll immediately get it once they have that language. And I think the idea of a fictionalized audience, if someone is there in persona and that persona is engaged as an audience member, it's a gift, because they have more. Anyone who's in that mode has more energy to give. It's coming from somewhere. They're going to be tired and hungry later, or they're taking it from people who are giving it to them, but they have it to give. So it can, I think it can be a real gift. Like I said, I've had very good moments, but otherwise it has to come from somewhere, and it tends to kill the room. So that's my wizened take on that.
All right. Sounds like we're largely in agreement on that.
Yeah, I just had a really illustrative.
Yeah, it was really good. Example. I'm really glad to hear it.
So. Thank you for letting me button.
Thank you for buttoning.
And thank you for still being here after I rambled on with the possibility you might not exist.
We appreciate it. All right. The next question.
Oh, right.
How do you, as a performer, leave an audience wanting more while also encouraging them to leave promptly? 'Cause bed awaits.
I want to know if somebody knows me who's like really knows my work. I'm very bad at this. My biggest failure is I don't know when to leave. I am usually the first person to show up at a theater for tech reasons, and I'm the last one to go home because I want to say goodbye and have a moment with anyone. And I've been caught after shows where somebody goes, hey, that thing you did, it mattered to me, or hey, you suck. I've literally had this, somebody hung around after a show to look me in the eye and tell me I suck. And I was like, okay, thanks. That's hurtful. But also, I'm needy for that real connection. And the stage is big and bold and beautiful. And one of the things is that stages have this unique superpower. They can create connected intimacy and clinical objective distance at the same time. So I'm having this really emotionally connected moment while also feeling really alone sometimes. Because I'm creating, because what I'm really doing is creating a really connected moment, and all my energy is focused on that.
Yeah.
And so as a result, sometimes I'm really wanting for that. So I come down from that heightened moment, and I really just want someone to be like, oh, there you are, you're great. And I know a lot of people just want to go home. A lot of performers, I know they're, you know, I got to go backstage and have a snack because I got blood sugar. But then I want to have that moment with people. I want to have that connection because I think it's wonderful. So I'm terrible at this. And usually we turn on the house lights and we drag the clowns backstage. We used to have a couple of things with the clowns. We didn't let the performers. We had this rule that is, if you're in, you're on. Basically, if you're still in costume, mm-hmm. that character is still present. So we never got to see a clown or a character on stilts not in that mode.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, someone would just come out and in character to that clown say, you got to get in the box. We have to ship you to the next show. And I'm like, all right, I got to go be packed up and mailed off to the next show. Or whatever the joke was, they got us out of that. And that was literally, it took an external force to drag me away. Yeah. It took my next appointment, as it were, to make it happen, because I'm terrible about it. And like my favorite thing to do after the show's over and the lights are on and there's dust bags, lay on the floor of the stage. Everyone, if you ever get to perform somewhere, lay on the floor there. It's yours. You earned it. No one else gets to do that. Lay on the floor. You lay on the floor and you go, the ceiling is really dirty here. And I'm the only one who knows that. That little spot of paint up there, that light is broken. No one knows. And then I get up and I go, well, I guess I should go. By this point, hours have passed and I have not left and people are still hanging. Yeah, I'm bad at it. This is why I'm good at rambling. I'm trying to keep the thing going. How about you? How do you get out of there? How do you, when the show's over and people have to go home and go to bed? I'll quote verbatim now that my glasses are on. How do you as a performer leave the audience wanting more while also encouraging them to leave promptly because that waits?
I am also bad at that.
Are you? Should learn how.
I think when it comes to stage shows, you do have the framework of the end of the show, the applause, the coming out,
and the ritual,
the curtain closes.
Yeah.
And one of the things about the clown is that it needs an outside force. Because the clown wants to be on stage. The clown wants to be with people.
Sure.
And that tends to be... I don't know that I know any clowns that that's not the case for. So you have to write an ending.
Oh, yeah. You have to write not just an ending, but you have to write that thing where the performers come out to the stage and say thank you and bow and whatever it is they do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to write that.
You have to write that.
Yeah.
And then you have to... You have to make the clown leave. Like, because they will keep engaging until the very last possible moment.
I would write myself little bits, last moments.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one, we had a stilt walker and a hot air balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And she got up on stage and she was dancing and singing and it was a big production number. Mm-hmm. And we came out, the entire cast comes out on stage and throws balloons into the audience. It's a big, big thing. And at the end, we all leave. We're like, goodbye, everybody. We leave. And we leave the stilt walker on stage. Because it's up a flight. They can't go up down a flight of stairs. We had to carry them up there, carry them back down. And so I come back out there just like, oh yeah, I forgot. And the clown picks this person up, puts them on their shoulders, turns to the audience and says, gotta go. And now I'm forced to. I wrote myself both one last little beat. I love being that last person. And the clown should always be the one who's like, yeah, we did this together. That was awesome. I'll see you next time. And he goes. And then the other thing is that I have to write a way to be physically required to leave.
Yep.
That's the only way I can do it.
That's what has to happen. Is there's got to be somewhere else the clown has to be.
I'm needed.
Because that's also, I mean, there is a reason why people, there's a phrase called pubbing the scene, which is where we're all going to go to the bar.
Oh, it's an improv thing.
It's, you know, an improv thing.
The improv at Red Fairs, they all go to the pub.
Yeah. We're all going to go to the pub. You have to write something that takes your characters away from the space they're currently in with the audience they're currently in and gives them somewhere they're going next. One of the things that works so well with Clown is that where they're going next is somewhere where there's going to be another audience because they don't really exist outside of that space. And that's unless something has gone terribly wrong with your show, that's going to leave your audience wanting more.
One hopes.
Yeah, that's if you've done it right, that's going to leave your audience wanting more. Because they've been having this playful, positive interaction with the clown the whole time. And so one of the things of those last moments with the clown, because the clown is the one who can have that last moment. Anybody else having that sort of a moment, it's the breaking of the fourth wall. It's the breaking, because even acknowledgement of the audience
depends on the type of show.
But like it's outside of the bounds of the game that is theater for most other types of characters to have that kind of interaction, and the clown can say, wasn't that great. We'll see you next time. That makes you feel like walking out of that theater might be walking into the next one where the clown's going to be next time. And that's the leaving them wanting more and also getting them out the door.
I think on the off chance that this is not just a curiosity, but another performer with a struggle, because we do get those, and I love that. I think one of the things you've got to realize is this is not an uncommon problem. Mm-mm. Jim Henson, the Muppets, had a constant problem with, they would write these great ideas and they would have no idea how to end them. And they came up with three ways to solve this problem.
If they didn't have a logical conclusion to the scene.
If you didn't have a logical way to finish a scene and get off stage, they either ate the performer, they had another larger monster eat the performer, mm-hmm. they had something explode.
Or they threw penguins. So no one has the right answer to this question.
So throw penguins, blow something up, or get eaten by an even bigger monster, and you'll be fine. That's the theatrical advice from if the Muppets don't know how to do it, nobody does, and it's fine. And that is...
That's all of them.
And look, we just run on and on because we don't know how to finish.
We don't know how to finish. We're just going to keep talking.
It's true. We're back. I don't know when we're going to get this one out the door. We're going to try to get out the door.
As soon as possible.
And we will be back. I want to take the moment to say, for different reasons for everyone, we know this year has been a roughie.
Yeah.
And so I'm really glad you're here listening, because that means we made it and you made it. And there's a clown I'm a big fan of. And she says to me sometimes, keep going. And it's the best advice I've ever been given. It's a two-word mantra I use for everything. Keep going. When it's hard, keep going. When it's good, keep going. When it's hopeless, keep going. Without question, something else happens. I mean, maybe it's, you know, you get eaten by a bigger monster, penguins get thrown at you and you explode. But something will happen. Something happens. So keep going. And we'll be here with you. Your friends at...
Two Clowns in a Closet.
That's the stuff.
Oh, that means I'm...
You've got to go get the door. You have to get the door. He's right. New to the walking
thing. I'm new to doing this part.
Yeah, you got to open the door to let the theme song in.
Just such go. A walk.
I know it's hard. Goodbye.
Goodbye.